You're listening to Around Comics, episode 202.
Good Lord.
Boom.
Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by.
Please.
Hey there, everybody. This is Chris Niesman here, and we've got a big old panel today. So yeah. It's last week we had Eric from the Comic Book Queers podcast. Now the one of the other co-hosts, Stevie D. How you doing?
Yeah,
that's how we do it.
You don't have to do that.
Grab me a beer, bro. Yeah,
I just wanted to scratch my nuts and say hi, guys.
Well, I just farted. Is that okay?
Oh, good Lord!
Hetero folks,
listener, and friend of the show, Kyle Singh. How you
and
doing?
Newest host of Comic Book Queer.
Are you?
Oh,
yes. We didn't make it official yet, but apparently we just announced.
I've invited myself into the show.
Cool. Yeah, so are you a cast member now?
I am now supporting cast.
Nice.
I'm the one holding Steve's nuts.
Let's just say that's some good support.
That's usually how it goes.
Well, there's the explicit tag.
I
just want to say, as a listener of Around Comics, that no one keeps it in and around the world of comics quite like you guys.
Well, thank you, Kyle.
I don't know what that means exactly, but thank you.
Next is the host of Word Balloon, Mr. John Suntress.
Hello, everyone.
We're going to get to your top of the stack from last week, I promise.
I don't know the top of the stack, but I do have a subject that I'd like to bring.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
Oh, God, he's going to talk
Darfur.
About old soda.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Green of Darfur.
So let me tell you about something we used to drink called Green River.
Oh!
It was wonderful.
Next is Mr. Tom Caters. How you doing, sir?
Hi.
That's all you got.
I was distracted by Hank walking in.
With Green River.
Oh,
my Hank, sandwich.
Hank got
I found
my
out
soda.
Hank can't read.
You didn't give me a sandwich?
We're closed.
Son of a...
Oh, that's the problem with Jimmy Jones.
I walked in, and they did this. No.
Hank, you don't take that.
Ooh, they gave you the Kembo Mutombo.
No, for an answer when it comes to
what kind of lackey are you? You don't want to make money.
We're going to have to get through this one because Sal's blood sugar is getting low. Sal, how you doing?
I'm good, other than I'm hungry. Oh, starving, and Hank disappointed me once again.
All right, well,
it's all your fault.
Apparently, we're not going to have high.
I never wanted.
We're not going to have high blood sugar, but we do have a sponsor, and that sponsor is InStockTrades.com, where waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. Mm-hmm. And remember that all orders over $50 do in fact ship for free. Right now, InStockTrades.com is offering our new book club selection, Tom Beland's True Stories.
What?
Tom Beland? Is it Beland?
Beland?
Tom Beland's True Story Swear to God Archive Volume 1 for a fantastic 47% off the cover price. First 15 issues of this six-time Eisner-nominated series are collected here and available to you for a mere $10.59. That's
all at InStockTrades.com. It sounds like the Susan Lucci of Eisner's. Always a bridesmaid, never a bride.
He'll get it.
I'll win one eventually.
It's sometimes just good enough to be nominated.
It's not, though. Everyone says that, but it's not.
Thanks, Francis Fisher.
Well, Sal, why don't you tell the fine folks out there about this little shindig we got going on October 25th.
Sure. We are proud to present the Windy City Comic Con.
With energy.
Join us on October 25th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Center on Halsted, just two blocks from Wrigley Field in the heart of Chicago's Wrigleyville neighborhood.
Stay there.
This one-day event will bring together the best comic book retailers, publishers, and creators in the Midwest. The area's best retailers will be offering great deals on new issues, collected editions, statues, games, toys, apparel, and tons, literally tons, of back issues. Meet some of the new Midwest best talent, including Gene Ha, Don Kramer, Mike Norton, Chris Burnham.
Yes.
Will Piper,
yeah.
Bill Reinhold, mm. Doug Klauba,
yeah.
Jeffrey Brown, Rich Kozlowski, Tim Seeley, and many, many, many more. Book your plans now to attend the Windy City Comic Con.
Yes, sir.
October 25. How about a Fresca? For a full list of exhibitors, guests, gaming schedules, and programming, go to www.windycitycomiccon.com. That's Comic-Con, spelled C-O-M-I-C-O-N.com. The Windy City Comic Con, Chicago's only comic book convention.
Yes, sir.
That's right.
I don't know if that's a really a true, accurate statement, but we're saying it.
Until it's contested, we're running
with
it.
It's got truthiness to it.
It's got some truthiness. Yeah, absolutely.
So, yes, please, and if you have a chance, go.
$5!
Yep, you can get your tickets online at WindyCityComicCon.com, pre-register. It'll help everything out because you can get through the lines. The lines of thousands of people that
are doing that. I might obstruct everyone as
you're
coming.
You're doing the Windy City Con?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
You're not going to.
I'll be there.
Well, you better because you're one of our participating, you're one of our participating podcasts. You and John and the iFanboy folks and Wednesday's Hall.
Yeah, I heard iFanboy's coming to town for this, too.
That's the rumor.
The rumor is Ron's going to be there with his video camera.
Wow.
Yep.
Shocking.
8mm camera.
No, I remember the last time I was on that video camera.
All right. Well, hey, we're a free-form episode today, kind of whatever we want to talk about. I know
crazy.
John, we short-shifted you last week with...
fuck John.
Yeah, we fucked John to talk with
Jason. On the episode because of it.
But we'll let you lead off. You said that you had something you wanted to chat about.
Yeah, it's kind of a side topic as far as it's not directly related to comic books.
What?
But if you're a gamer and looking forward to Jim Lee's MMO that's coming up with the DC Universe.
DC Universe Online.
It might impact you. If you're a Comcast subscriber, are you aware of the broad bandwidth ceiling that Comcast is?
I was not.
It's apparently starting in October. Every Comcast house will be allotted 250 gigs of bandwidth per month, which is a lot.
It's a lot of bandwidth.
It is, but I wonder because, and I'm not an active gamer, but I think. That might impact a lot of people that are World of Warcraft guys and MMO guys.
You know, we've got...
Hank!
He's gone. He went to get me a sandwich.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Oh,
Hank's our gaming expert.
Well, I didn't know. He needed
a sandwich guy. My sandwich guy first. Your gamer guy second.
Jesus. He's like a budget Shia LaBeouf.
Just visiting a website is... You know, a few megabytes, like 16 megabytes or so, I believe. Just visit you guys might
it
even
depends on the website. I mean,
what about like porn?
Tom has this really worried look on his face.
Right.
Huge downloads. But, I mean, 250 gigs
per month.
That's a lot. That's a lot for a month. I mean, you'd have to be downloading a lot of music or a lot of
right, and that's this is Comcast. That is Comcast's argument that this is one of the ways that they
hope to... The average person, even a gamer, I don't. The gaming thing, I'm not quite certain on because I don't know how much bandwidth you're
for like an Xbox.
Downloading.
Xbox.
If you're on your Xbox or you're on your PC and you're playing online, I don't know how much information is being transferred constantly. Like when you're constantly playing. How much bandwidth is being used at that time? Because you probably, pre-download a lot of information as far as...
Sure.
And then it's just displayed as you go through. So I don't know how much... It could be a lot, but I have a feeling it's not like video. It's not like you're constantly streaming a video while you're playing a video game. I don't think.
What about stuff like Vonage and like voice over IP stuff? That'll be impacted, right?
Well, if you're Vonage, though, it has nothing to do with Comcast.
It's purely Comcast.
They're
already
your ISP
this.
Is Vonage.
Hank, you're back. Come on over here. We have a question for you.
Sandwich Boy.
You being a gamer.
I mean, to me, it's just Comcast saying we don't want those customers.
Yeah.
We want the average Joe that's just going online and getting his
email. Right. We're talking games more than comics right now. And about Comcast's new decision to limit the monthly. It's a monthly cap of 250 gigs. So as a gamer, what kind of impact is this going to have on the gaming community for online play?
Well, I think it's going to have a lot of impact on the people who have multiple systems and the people who play a lot of the MMORPGs online.
Exactly.
The Oblivions.
That's kind of what I figured.
It takes up a lot of bandwidth, and when you play multiple of those, it's going to, I don't know if...
Multiple, like, well, at the same time?
No,
but no, but when you say multiple, you mean like multiple days or hours or
how about your casual Donkey Kong player?
Well, no, because honestly, like
fine, Tommy,
bubble bobble.
I have a 12-year-old nephew who's all about MMOs and he's on all the time and I'm like warning my sister. I'm like, you know, this it might be a problem because the penalty, which
should
I didn't mention,
that he should yeah, not
if,
play
if you do it twice. Fine. You're gone for a year. They take away your internet for a fucking year.
What?
This is what they're doing.
Comtrack.
And again, because now the FCC has been trying to say, well, wait a minute, you can't do that. And it's like, yeah, but you see, you kept the internet free, so really, your jurisdiction on the internet is still kind of fuzzy. So it's, you know, Comcast will get its way until there's a mass exodus from Comcast, which I doubt would happen.
It's not going to affect most. The majority of people probably are not going to be affected.
But I think people who listen to our show and might be gamers and stuff, they might be concerned.
As a parent, if my kid's spending that much time playing video games online anyway, I would go, too bad.
I understand, and I kind of feel the same way. But
outside, do something with you.
Yeah, well, what about those of us that don't have kids that spend a lot of time playing
video games? Well, there's
maybe someone
can make a decision to use a different ISP.
But that's the thing. You know, entertainment is changing, and the way that we're getting it is changing. And broadband is becoming a huge part of that. And obviously, there are ancillary forms of entertainment that are growing, such as podcasts, because of this.
Yeah, new innovation. to be an Around Comics listener or Word Balloon listener or CBQ listener, you're going to need, you know, if you are a hardcore comic book podcast listener, you listen to five or six of them. You're probably going to need about 200 meg a month.
Well, that's
download.
Yeah, meg. Yeah. So that's a lot less, obviously.
But you should also, in that case, you should also go outside.
Yeah.
If you're listening to that many
podcasts. That's a quarter of a gig as opposed to the 250 gigs you're getting a month. So we should be okay. But no, you're right. People are going to make choices.
I think it's more, I mean, people that are like downloading shitloads of illegal
content. I'm just going to have to cut my porn down by 10 gigs a month.
But that's why I figured that we were trying
to... I don't know with the gaming. I don't know because how much bandwidth is it to be playing a game like World of Warcraft or something, how much constant bandwidth? Because don't you download initially?
Well, Hank's 15, he knows.
You know, a lot of the information.
Well, I'm not sure in the exact number, but I know that playing World of Warcraft does put a slight halt on your computer. And if you play multiple of those games, if you play World of Warcraft and say like Lord of the Rings Online, which is another MMO that. The 250 limit. I don't know if that's going to be great. You know,
that's what I mean, man. That's what I'm. I think it's going to be interesting. And again, you're only hearing more and more about MMOs. The Buffy MMO just got announced.
Yeah, the DC Universe MMO.
That's one of the first.
That
ones
is a massively multiplayer online.
Online.
Sign me up. I can't believe I'm Angel.
My life is like an MMO.
Oh, this is great.
Yes, go outside and play. Well,
yeah. the other thing though is that because. So many people are trying to provide content in different ways. Like Netflix is doing their online thing through Xbox.
Yes, yes.
You know, where you can stream movies online. I mean, that's only going to become bigger and bigger.
They quantified watching standard quality movies. It would be 130 movies a month. To watch a full 130
movies.
It is a lot.
It's a lot of goddamn movies.
Unless you're gaming on top of that.
But, watch out, Tabor.
But yeah, that's the thing. It's like, yeah, what if Timmy's upstairs MMOing his little ass off, and Mom's downstairs watching Grey's Anatomy online, and, you know.
And Dad's in the basement downloading
porn.
Hey,
if I was 18,
high definition porn.
That's right.
Because Lou clearly isn't being satisfied by Mom, who's watching Grey's Anatomy. Do your wifely duty, for Christ's sake, and get down here. So I don't have to watch this crap. But that's not my story.
We got
my home life.
We got Cicero Joe here all of a sudden.
No, but honestly, that was my first thought was, how is this going to affect gamers? And I think it's...
I think more so than anything, it's people that are downloading...
Illegally downloading movies.
Well, yeah. Maybe.
Suntress, hero of the gamers.
Hell, I download
champion of the gamers.
Yeah, it frustrates me because...
Wow. Someone is bored by this topic.
It's a way around what people are trying to do with net neutrality. And it's a way that the ISPs are trying to fight back, and Comcast seems to be leading the way. Now, if they succeed with it, I can certainly see other ISPs following suit. And I think it's lousy. I really do.
Man, that's
Comcast
like,
sucks.
Comcast just sucks.
That's like Wilson putting a limit on how many times he can toss around a baseball. That's similar, right? I don't know.
Pretty much.
I don't know nothing about games.
Well,
they have a right. I mean, it's not like
they do.
It's
and
not
I,
like
well,
it's
I have heard.
Error.
I have heard the ISP's point because they're like, hey, some people do illegally download music and films, and it's like turning on a faucet and walking away and leaving the thing open all day. I can appreciate that. But I also think that other countries have built up their bandwidth in infrastructure to allow a lot more access, and you can't stop rock and roll. Everybody wants more bandwidth. The people who don't have bandwidth,
I don't know where John's going with this one.
No, but my point is, much like cable or any other innovation in entertainment, everyone is eventually going to want in. So eventually, the infrastructure as it is,
the market's going to dictate.
Well, this is, I mean, it's simply a way for them to, you know, 6 months from now, go, okay, well, you know, you people that are going over the limit, well, we're going to let you now, but it's going to cost you
X amount of dollars more.
Yeah, I don't think that's necessarily a horrible, evil thing for them to do.
No, I understand.
Yeah, but it's just like, when you think about it, you're just...
Oh, sorry about that.
Boring.
Am I boring you, Stevie? Is this
I mean, God forbid you have to cut back your playing on your level 43 L4 here.
Yeah. That will not stand.
Thank you. Not only are you a sandwich, but you're a nerd as well. Yeah. I love that.
My elven mage.
Well, I tell you what, let's switch gears here.
Shut up, Stevie. Don't try to make me feel better. You hated my topic.
We're going to keep an eye on that because October's coming up very soon, so we're going to know the...
Absolutely.
We're going to know exactly what those limitations are. So.
And it's right around Windy City Comic Con. It'll be right around then, too.
October 25th.
What?
Windy City Comic Con, you said.
I have no idea about that.
We're sponsoring ourselves now.
So there you go.
All right. So you want switch to comics? Are we ready?
What? Comics?
Kyle has been leafing through comics left and right over here, just waiting to talk. So, all right, Mr. Singh, let it rip.
Top of my stomach. Don't hold that so tight. Don't.
Yeah.
You're doing this all wrong.
It's how we are.
That's how we are.
Just about ate that microphone.
Top of my stack is, as it almost every month, is Green Lantern. Obviously, some Green Lantern fans on this show. I can't say enough good things about this book. I know there's been some criticism about John's doing, but their fans are accusing him of doing a filler here. Doing the Secret Origins, but it's pretty essential to the total setup for the Blackest Night, which I don't know, I'm pretty excited about.
I think we all are, yeah.
It's a really good story.
Really not. It's amazing. Excited about Blackest Night. I'm sorry.
Why? Oh, I get black. Yeah, okay.
I can whatever. Whatever. Tom. Yeah, all right, I get it. Thanks.
If it was Whitest Night, you'd
have to love it.
It's gay Klansman.
With Secret Origins, I really like making Sinestro and Hal. Not only, the teacher, and also that there is this kind of friendship between them. Or learning, connection. It's one of the things I like about the Superman-Luthor in the Silver Age thing of that one time these guys did like each other and did work together.
How do you feel? Like, I know some people are feeling that he's retconning too much. I don't think that this is really taking that much liberty with the character.
I feel a lot of times when people say stuff like that, they haven't read
the actual beginning.
Two-dimensional
panels.
Right. 100%. I mean, it completely works. Totally works. Yeah, I mean, truth be told, you can fit a ton of material in between those panels.
Has anyone ever actually read the Batman origin from Detective 27?
Sure. Yeah, sure.
It's like five panels.
That's all I needed.
Criminals are a cowardly lot. And superstitious, too.
There's lots of space to add new stuff in. Oh, this will be controversial.
I want to know what you think of this.
Yeah, let's get into this one.
I wonder what they're all looking at right now.
Second on my stack was Last Will and Testament, DC Universe, Brad Meltzer, and the Kuberts. It was not what I expected. I thought it was going to be the Last Will and Testament of all the heavy hitters of the DCU, and it turns out to be basically the tie-up to the Judas contract, which I'm actually kind of fine with. I like the fact that Meltzer is able to take characters that I generally
know. No one gives a shit about.
And he's able to make them completely badass. And I felt like I got my money's worth. I thought it was a great story. And I want to see Meltzer back writing this character.
You know, by the time this broadcast comes up, Brad will have already been in town. But for our purposes, you know, he's coming Monday.
Oh.
Because he's doing his signings for A Book of Lies. He'll be out of town, and then he'll also be
my only
burbs.
May I just say one more thing?
Oh. Yes,
the other thing that I really loved about... It's my show now.
Yeah.
No.
Oh,
one other thing I want to say.
Yeah, see? Right, here we go.
Other cool part about this is Joe Kubert does some
some panels.
Yep.
And I have not, I don't think I've ever seen like a Joe Kubert Batman and Nightwing or
Captain
Wonder
Cole.
Woman or, it's sweet.
Yeah, it is. You know, he did all those covers in the 70s, and that's where you'd see him do a lot of mainstream stuff. And I remember, too, when Adam and Andy were very young and they got the Doc Savage, Danny O'Neill story, Joe kind of came in and really kind of helped them finish the book. Mm-hmm. And it's obvious that's what he did in this book as well.
Gorgeous.
The art is great.
How did you like it, Tom? Here we go.
Here's the thing. I think Brad Meltzer is very good at making short scenes that are very evocative for characters. I think he's not necessarily the best at taking a story and going from A to B to C with it. Like, he's very good when something's set in motion of, like, I really liked all the really short scenes with all the different characters and even the stuff with the Rocky from the Challengers of the Unknown. I liked all that because I think he's really good, and the last scene's really awesome with Hal Jordan just like smiling and going like, yeah, this is what we do, and then just like sort of taking off. The thing that I didn't like so much was the Geo-4 story kind of had some of the problems I had with when he was doing Justice League, where he's very good at the character moments, but when it comes to like moving a story from like A to B to C, like it doesn't flow really well. It's sort
like
of
he needs a co-plotter.
Or just
did
like
you like Identity Crisis?
It's like a tightness. I think Identity Crisis is the best he's been at doing that, of like moving a story forward. Like he's like, I made this comparison on our website. He's like this baseball player who's like a really gifted base runner. Like, he's awesome at stealing bases, but he's not always the greatest at hitting the ball. It's like someone else has to get him on base, and then once he's there, he's amazing. I mean, I know there's not
which
many
is,
people.
Which is tough as a baseball player because it's hard to get on base.
I mean, it's one of those things. But he might be the best guy at those short two-page scenes or like short three-page scenes.
Yeah, like that writing. Justice League Zero.
Yeah, writing those things. He does. Yeah. He's maybe great. The best guy at doing those type of things.
Well, that was the last year's single issue Eisner Award winner was the Justice League.
11 with Gene
Ha. Yeah,
with
the Mind Shift.
He's great at that.
And Gene Ha will be at the Windy City Comic Con on October 25th.
Interesting.
I thought I liked it overall. I thought it would have been better if he would have focused on. I think it would have been cool to see him do more characters and not have so much of the Geo-Force thing in it, which I thought was a little.
He even said, I interviewed him about the issue, and he even said this really had he continued on to Justice League, this would have been the next story arc, would have been G-Force kind of,
Somebody
revenge.
Actually brought up a really good point, though, about this issue that I wanted to bring up, especially to Kyle.
Yes.
I didn't think about it before. Randall on the Graphic Details podcast, which none of you listen to, that's fine. He said, he said that he didn't understand the story because there was a one issue story a while ago, I can't remember where it was at, where Geo-Force was talking to Terra and ran a DNA test on her and found out that she was his sister, essentially. And then, but he told her, "No, you're not." And she took off like, "Good, I can be my own person now." And
the whole Terra thing doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. But that's the point of this story. Like, what was the point of this story? He's so bent on revenge about his sister, and yet there's no point to it because they've already established it. He's okay with that she's still alive, and
I think,
why is his anger still there?
I think they haven't decided what Terra, which Terra is really alive or still around, like, and Meltzer's still going off of the idea that Terra
is dead.
Is been dead for.
But does anybody else remember that story, though?
No. I mean, Terra's been floating around.
Yeah,
in limbo.
That's
like
a huge continuity problem right now. Palmiotti and
Gray,
and the Animatic Connor too. Yeah,
we're doing that Terra.
There's another Terra,
but it's a completely different Terra.
Yeah,
absolutely,
that's a different character.
That's one of the things that I agree with Randall about with this book, though.
As well, you should.
Where's Hawkman?
No, don't even. It's not nerdy Hawkman into this discussion.
Don't even get me started.
And the other thing too was, I remember when this was initially being solicited, it was Final Crisis, Last Will and Testament. Now it's DC Universe, Last Will and Testament.
Because it isn't tie in exactly.
No, it doesn't, and it's it. Does it? It kind of comes.
Because nothing ties into Final Crisis.
Yeah, like you said, I'm having trouble with the other
initial forward motion or igniting moment to explain why we're at this point, unless it's going to be in Final Crisis 4.
I wouldn't count on it.
I wouldn't either. So
Tom, would you give it 1 or 10 stars?
But I still like the story a lot.
Jesus Christ.
Ooh.
I'd say it's shit. No. it has really cool stuff in it. I thought it was like a weird mix of that Geo-4 story and the really, really cool, like, short... Like, the Captain Cold scene is amazing in it, where he's the... I love the quote where he stops the robbery and he's like, how did it feel? It's like, oh, it's the same rush as when you commit a crime, except you don't walk away with anything.
Yeah.
I don't know how you could live like that.
Yeah, and his note, what was it, compliments of your friendly effing Captain Cold, which I thought was great. Speaking of Captain Cold, something I've been reading, the Final Crisis Rogue's Revenge.
Jesus, is that all you people read is Final Crisis stuff?
It's good, though.
Rogue's Revenge doesn't even need Final
Crisis. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's a completely different...
I mean,
they just slapped that on all these miniseries.
Well, I mean,
have to be really.
It is tied in a little bit because
why they haven't joined Libra.
It is Libra, and so it's dealing with that storyline. But this really is a Rogue story, kind of spinning out of the events of the death of Bart Allen. And I've never seen the Rogues this badass. I mean, they are fucking people up.
Yeah, it's because people are trying to steal their shit.
Yeah, it's okay because they're killing bad guys. So
that's right.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's all right to do.
Well, this is what Johns does best. I mean, he's been the good caretaker of the Flash.
Well, the scene with Lensnart's father.
Oh yeah,
and you know he's gonna kill his father, and he
those that don't know.
Yeah, and he turns around, walks out of the room, and he's like, I can't.
I don't know.
Captain Cole.
Oh, okay.
That's his identity.
And he walks out of the room, and he's like, I can't do it. Heat wave, you do it.
That was good.
Sure, no problem.
Yeah.
Spoilers, by the way.
Yes.
Too late. We already spoke.
Has Colin's been this good since he was on Flash with Johns?
He picked up where he left off.
I think the coloring's better.
Mm-hmm.
The coloring and his Marvel stuff, like Omega Flight, everything was had that weird muted color, and everything was really.
Who
it
is
has
coloring?
That?
Know your colorist. It is.
It's the same thing with that first issue of Ultimates 3 where everything looked like it was through like
Dave McCaig.
Oh, okay. There you go. Dave McCaig's one of the best in the business.
Yeah.
I like Mirror Master's characterization. He's never been this creepy.
He's creepy.
Yeah.
He's real creepy.
I enjoy the fact of the way that they've sort of. I don't know the character's name, the kid.
Inertia.
No.
Trickster.
How he sort of has joined the group, but they're not quite... They haven't quite let him in yet.
Right,
And you see in this issue, issue
great.
Number 2 specifically, of how almost he's learning how serious these guys are.
Yeah.
And seeing, you know, how absolutely brutal and ruthless they can be.
Yeah, I love this scene where... The young, edgier replacements.
The new
Rogues.
And then you see the panel where he's like, fuck you, I'm going to find you,
and I'm going to kill you.
And then I'm going to kill my father.
That's what he said.
And then the best part was they found him like in 3 panels.
Bam, they're there.
Yeah.
Dumbass, you're using the mirrors.
Exactly.
Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, that was shocking, too. It's like, holy fuck, they just wiped those guys out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and almost in a playful way. Like, they just kind of toy with these guys for a little bit. And then,
like, they're punks.
Yeah. And, and they say, we're making a statement. We're this isn't just us taking care of these guys. We're making a statement to anybody to Libra, you know.
Don't mess with us.
Right. Yeah.
I liked all the names, for, like, Chill. It was like...
Yeah.
Chill.
Like, it was like the biggest jerk-offs that everybody would hate, you know? And,
Burn.
Burn, Chill.
Wave knockoff.
Yeah. Mr. Magic or whatever.
Wind Witch.
I'd love to see... and it'll never happen, but, like, Johns take the Rogues and write a Vertigo miniseries.
That'll never happen.
More mature readers DC universe type stuff.
Well, but there is none.
Sure, yeah.
That's why it would need
Marvel
to be Vertigo.
Max?
That's what I mean.
Or I would hate to see the Rogues disappear into Vertigo.
Well, no, I don't mean disappear. I'm just saying
it would be cool to see.
It would be cool to let him, because you can tell he really is pushing the boundaries with the Rogues. He's you know he's done he did that in. Yeah. I don't remember what it was. I don't know if it was The Flash or what, but he had written that story about them and just sort of the drug use and the sex and, you know, just how criminal they are. But to be able to, like, sort of let him do it without any, you know,
I'd love to see a Captain Cold series after something like this. I mean, he's built this guy up so well. He's such a badass.
Yeah, he's not not a two-dimensional character.
I don't think we give, I mean, John's enough credit for sort of...
I think we give John's plenty of credit.
Well, no, I know, but the point is, like, we give him a lot of credit, certainly, but he writes really good bad guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, really, really good bad guys, as well as he writes good guys.
That Justice and League of the Future, you know, that he just had in Action Comics facing the Legion.
Yeah.
Christ, those were, those were messed up.
I mean, it's so many times villains are just sort of there.
Yeah,
and
but
he gives them as much characterization and motivation as the good guys, and
because,
that's what makes...
Yeah, and good conflict, exactly. Yeah. The hero and the villain. The hero is only as great as his great, the greatest obstacle, and that's the villain. So, now he gets that.
I wanted to mention... I wanted to ask if anyone else has been reading Invincible Iron Man.
Yes.
Have you been enjoying it?
Yes.
I have been enjoying it as well.
Well, first of all, that whole idea of taking technology and bringing it to the masses and bringing it to the third world and stuff. I mean, Fraction is a reader. Fraction, I mean, like Bendis and like Rucka and the better writers, Brubaker as well, I mean, Johns, they read things in the world and they are able to kind of put them through
the transit. Haven't been reading it, Ezekiel Stane, Obadiah Stane's son, is going after Tony Stark, and the way he's doing it is by taking like leftover scraps of Tony Stark's technology and sort of giving it to third world terrorists, and like that's how he's sort of like feeling all this stuff, and it's frustrating. I mean, Tony, because he's, you know, he's in charge of S.H.I.E.L.D., but he's got this guy who's, you know, underground, and it's everywhere, and you can't quite track where it's going, and he's very, you know, he's willing to do just about anything to like get back at Tony, and I've been enjoying it quite a bit, and I've been surprised because I'm not the biggest Iron Man fan really, but I picked it up, and I've never read really an Iron Man series before this, and I was like, oh, this is really quite good.
It also like immediately ties into the movie in a way that like Marvel has failed to capitalize on the success of their movies so many times and not have a truly like convenient and accessible jumping.
Well, it came out like this. Didn't it come out the same?
Yeah, it was like the same week
of the movie. Yeah. Yeah.
And it looks like director of S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to switch to War Machine.
Yep.
So Fraction's going to be doing
the Iron Man book,
right?
But
yeah. So that's
the awesome. And I'm not the biggest LaRocca fan. I do think he does fantastic armor.
Yeah,
you know, better than he does, I think, faces.
Faces,
yeah. Which is good because you see a lot of armor.
Better than flesh, I think.
Yeah, it's, I mean, like, the suits of armor look amazing. Yeah. I think he does really good.
I like his people, though.
Damn you, you're going to make me pick that up now.
It's a little...
I liked them together when they did the Spider-Man annual last year.
Sometimes the faces look a little... It's like everyone's always looking in a camera. A little bit to me.
Well, they were.
A lot of times
they
were.
Not megging, but... Yeah. Not megging. Not mugging, but, like, a little, like...
Too intense?
Yeah, it's like everyone... And whenever I look at a page, everyone's just like... Yeah, like looking at you instead of looking at what's going on a little bit in the faces.
Screen captures of DVDs. Yeah, that's what it looks like.
The faces are a little like too
animated, like, you know, or like too engaged.
Yeah, too weird. Like, see, engaged on its own without something else on the panel. You know, like just a face in the panel, right. Like
it's like a tan.
Like look, and it's just, it looks a little
not like, Greg
like,
Land, where it's like somebody speaking and screaming, but no,
it's not like that. But every once in a while, you get a face that's sort of like out of contextly, like.
I do think, going back to John's point a little bit, I was going to say, I thought they did have done a really good job in making it, if you weren't an Iron Man fan and you saw the movie and picked it up, certainly you could read that as Robert Downey Jr. And
absolutely.
And that's completely
And there's a stain, you know. Yeah. Go ahead.
If you're an Iron Man...
and not on my pants.
If you're an Iron Man...
or was stain.
For a long time... they didn't really change it enough where it's not still the same Tony Stark that you've been reading for the last 2 years.
Yeah, it fits in completely.
You know what I mean? It fits in both ways really well, which is what you were saying.
Which is what
you
question.
Yeah, absolutely. For
the only thing
way.
That bothers...
I mean, it doesn't matter. You can be a brand new fan and pick it up and relate to it if you like, you know, the Iron Man movie, or you could be a longtime fan of Iron Man and it's still the same Tony Stark that you've been reading for a long time.
The one thing that bothers me a little bit is Maria Hill for S.H.I.E.L.D. and Tony sometimes have like arguments or like moonlighting arguments, and I'm just like, and it just seems a little, it seems like a little weird for two people who aren't romantic interests
yet. He's Tony Stark, my
friend. Well, I mean, but it seems a little, it seems a little weirdly casual, or like things where they say, it's like the one time I pick up a little bit on Fraction.
Well, she doesn't like him. She never. I mean, that was from the very beginning of that whole relationship. It makes sense because she is, you know, she feels slighted by the fact that he runs S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right.
She doesn't.
Well, that's the only time I feel a little bit too much of Fraction slip through, maybe a little bit. Like, the back and forth banter between them is just a little too, like, banter. Gilmore
Clever
Girls. Like, a little too, like, just a touch too much. But otherwise, I mean, this book's, like, the perfect book for Fraction to write, because he's got all the, like, any idea that you can have with technology. Iron Man is the perfect character. To do it. He can do whatever you want him to do,
Have you guys discussed the team writing pairs that Marvel has got going right now, and how are we liking those books? Like Fraction and Remender now on Punisher War Journal, Fraction and Brubaker on X-Men.
I'm not caught up enough on stuff to say whether or not I like it or not.
I haven't been reading some of the team. I haven't been reading X-Men.
Iron Fist, of course. Although, in reality, it really was Fraction writing and Brubaker editing, and just kind of every now and then saying, well, why don't you try this instead?
Yeah. Have you liked the new Iron Fist with I have too.
Yeah.
With Dwayne
Swierczynski.
Dwayne S.
Yes. First of all, I think Fraction left the book in an interesting point with Danny realizing that 33 is the death year for all Iron Fist.
Yeah.
So I think that's interesting. And I think Dwayne has left enough of the devices of flashbacks and tying back into the Iron Fist history. Again, a blank slate that, as we were saying before about rewriting continuity, it is a blank slate. You can do so much with that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's neat. I like the artists that have been on. I'm glad that they still got guys like Russ Heath to come in on the flashback stuff. So yeah, I don't know. I hope it survives because I've read a couple of his novels.
Yeah,
The Wheelman is the last one that I read, and it's great. He's a great crime writer. He's a guy. Brubaker and Rucka were raving about this guy before he joined Marvel.
It was a great transition between the writing teams and to him too, because it was very flawless. I mean, he picked right up on what they had laid down for him, and that was great.
I'm not reading his Cable, and I'm not a big X-Men fan, so I have to admit I haven't been reading his Cable.
So
speaking
you're a huge Cable fan,
not a Cable.
Yes, I love. Dudes running around with babies strapped to their chest.
Oh, yeah.
Any comic with a baby strapped to their chest.
So in the 80s, you love Nomad.
Absolutely. No, I wanted to switch gears a little bit, but you were talking about crime. Do you know anything? Obviously, I want to talk a little bit about the DC...
The Vertigo thing?
Vertigo crime.
It looks cool.
With Azzarello kind of heading that up, which I'm fucking thrilled about that, because...
He's stoked. I know that.
God, he's such an amazing crime writer.
Absolutely.
But
what is this that you're talking about?
Vertigo is doing... Basically, they're doing a crime graphic novel.
Original graphic novels that are going to be crime.
Oh, nice.
And Azzarello's
he's writing the first one, and then also...
But isn't he also sort of involved with the whole...
Like editorial or
whatever? Yeah, kind of. I thought he was
really?
Sort of...
I didn't hear that.
I had thought that he's sort of involved with it beyond just writing the first one. But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I could be completely wrong on that.
They do have specific editors that I heard named, but I didn't
hear. I thought maybe he just had a little bit more involved than, maybe not editorial, but maybe just sort of a game plan in some way. Like I said, that could be completely hearsay.
One of the other writers I know involved is Ian Rafkin, who's a great Scottish mystery writer, and if you know your British television, Rebus is his character, and he is going to be writing a Hellblazer OGN for the line. But have you noticed the covers are so novel looking and not comic book looking? And I think this might be the right time, based on History of Violence and Road to Perdition, to revisit those ideas that they had 10 years ago in Paradox Press, or Piranha. Paradox or Piranha? Which was the mystery line?
Paradox, I think it was.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, there were some wonderful graphic novels that were coming out at comic book's lowest point.
Right.
Yeah. And so nobody was reading this stuff, and, like, you know, really good authors and really good artists, and you know, Max Collins doing Road to Perdition, and John Wagner doing History of Violence, and Tom DeHaven did a great book called Green Candles, and nobody read this stuff. And I think now, especially with the involvement of the book expos that DC and Vertigo have participated in lately and stuff, this is a real interesting opportunity where there's going to be a line of books that
do you think it's
casual readers are going to maybe check out.
Forebear to possibly, you know, more original graphic novel work coming on. I mean, I know, like, Ezra's got another OGN, the Joker OGN that was just announced, which...
Yeah. Well, you know, as the price point of the floppy continues to kind of creep up, they're going to have to kind of reassess what is the most accessible format for stories. And so I don't know, and
you know, book sales obviously are a huge part of.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because Vertigo, obviously, that's what carries Vertigo is the trades. It's not the floppies.
And they're going to all graphic novels, right?
Vertigo yes. Is? Well,
that's where it's trending. I think.
Yeah. Maybe very long term. I know that Vertigo point, you know, 2.0 as it's being described. This is the game plan, is to do more OGNs. But now also,
but it's like, you know, they're not coming out and saying, yeah, we're not going to publish Hellblazer or Scalped or stuff like that.
But one line of OGNs that just debuted last year and seems to have been a crashing failure would be the Jinx line.
The Minx line.
And there was some good stuff that came out of the Minx line.
Well, but it kind of, and not to sidetrack back to Kirkman's manifesto, but if you build it, will they come? I guess the answer in the Minx line was no.
I don't know.
They were there. And quality writers, quality artists, and cute little books, and nice little, you know, subjects, and nobody's buying the shit. So, you know.
Yeah, depends on where it's positioned.
But I think the mysteries are a better way to go.
Well, but I still think that points more towards OGNs with mainstream characters, as opposed to, you know what I mean? It's like, what's the deal? For them to come out with a Joker graphic novel that is in continuity,
right?
That is part, you know, I mean, that's obviously based.
Is it
off
in continuity? I mean, it's
supposedly. It's based off of the success of the film. I mean, that's what they're looking at.
Sure.
Having things to sell to people that may be interested in
hungry for more. Hungry for more stories.
I mean, that's part of the problem that they have right now is there's too many titles. There's not a simple place to point someone that watches Iron Man necessarily or watches Batman or whatever, and walks into a bookstore. There's not an easy place for anybody to point them to, and I think that's something that they're looking at. So maybe we're going to do original graphic novels, completely original ideas and characters. That while still that may be tentative, I think looking at taking characters, you know, that are mainstream characters and popular characters already, and doing original graphic novels is certainly in the plans. Hopefully, I think. I'd love to see more stuff in that, you know, context of taking, you know, a Superman and just doing an original graphic novel. Mm-hmm. And it's been done in the past, but generally it's been done in a way that didn't necessarily lead to its success, because it was always sort of, this isn't really Superman. This isn't, you know what I mean? This isn't really a Superman story. It is, but not really.
You mean It's a Bird? You mean like Steve Siegel's
book? Yeah, something like that, or which was actually successful in bookstores, but...
Well, critically successful. Yeah. I don't know how well, honestly.
Yeah, I don't know. But even... What's the one?
For All Seasons.
For All Seasons.
For All Seasons. And this.
Well, but
like
that too came out periodically before it was
right.
collected.
Yeah, it was
because honestly, yeah.
Prestige for it. It was like 40
you're right.
pages.
Yeah. The based on conversations I've had recently on Oil Berlin interviews with Marvel people, Marvel is still convinced it's better to come out with the monthlies, the periodicals, and then ultimately collect it rather than an OGN. As much as fans want the OGNs back, that there's still a profit to be made. The stores would prefer it, supposedly.
I think from a business sense, it makes sense for them to do it. I'm just talking about from a creative standpoint of better stories. I think ultimately, in the long run, I think the problem with that thinking is it's very short term.
It's right now, and to stick with the serialized format and collect it, I agree.
It's only right now. It's not long term at all. That's a whole other.
Speaking of Marvel, though,
I wanted to ask you: do you know anything about Marvel's been sort of releasing these images, these black and white, kind of almost Sin City looking images
It's got to be some sort of X-Men thing.
I think it is an X-Men.
Is it an X-Men?
Yeah. Well, one of them looked like the owl, didn't he? I mean,
one looked like Rogue.
One looked like Rogue.
One looked like Cyclops.
The one with the playing cards clearly might be Gambit.
Yes.
And one, I'm trying to think of the most ridiculous text. One looked like Arcade.
And one of them looked like...
well, the... and I know
where
that...
Is, don't forget,
there was a big...
Arcade?
This summer, right after San Diego.
Peter Davis did. Next Factor.
Right after San Diego, there was a big...
I don't either, really, but he was in there.
Was there?
Yes.
Okay. I was just wondering. I hadn't really heard anything.
Oh, Ed wasn't there?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Hank's not on mic. We can't hear what he's saying.
Okay, because, well, yeah, apparently, according to Hank, but Brew wasn't there.
I'm extremely excited about the crime stuff from Ezra.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm really excited.
I just went and reread.
Sounds actually really cool.
Sal's excited about potential crime.
Did you download the San Diego panel from Vertigo?
I have not.
You should.
Yeah.
You really should, because, you know, and again, and I've said this before on Around Comics, and I think on my show, too. Man, DC does a great job of really putting out all of the panels that they do at the big cons, and there literally is like 15 to 17 hour-long panels.
There's some really good ones.
And especially hearing Karen Berger talk about the direction Vertigo is going into, I think would feed this interest that you have, and it's great.
You know, speaking of Karen Berger, sorry to...
I've been talking a lot.
I was reading up on House of Mystery, an article that I written a few weeks back, and reading about the history of that series. I had no idea. Karen Berger's been editing at DC forever.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's been there since, I want to say, like the early 80s?
Yeah. She was Alan Moore's. She was Alan Moore's Swamp Thing editor.
Yeah.
So she
was pre-Vertigo, probably.
Yes, yeah. She was. Yeah, obviously so. Yeah.
She was doing like the relaunch the end of the House of...
She created Vertigo.
Pretty much.
That's her baby. And it's funny, you were asking before about it would be great to see more Vertigo spins on DC characters. It seems like the gap between the Vertigo world and the DC world is just widening. That's their thing.
Although, strangely enough, the Wildstorm and DC world seems to be closing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
Wildstorm doesn't know what to do with itself.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, just
separated by the bleed.
The frontline Wildstorm books, you know, because of what they've been having Jim Lee do the last couple of years working on the MMO, are kind of, you know, burning into brick walls. But meanwhile, it's the little books of Wildstorm that are capturing people's attention. Welcome to Tranquility, even Chris Gage with Stormwatch, and granted, it didn't do well enough to justify it continuing, but again, it's those little ripples.
I don't know, butt in here again. The Superman Beyond, the 3D one. Why don't you think Morrison used Apollo from from Authority? Why didn't he?
I saw him in there.
Apollo
was
in there?
Or someone identified and said, is that Apollo flying by?
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. They said something about Apollo. Well, that ship that
Ultraman... Right.
And that's the friggin' Authority ship.
Yeah.
Well, that's true, too.
Okay,
yeah.
So he is in there.
There's a ship, and I assume those two characters in the beginning that were silhouetted, and he says something about Apollo. I assume that was Midnighter and Apollo.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. The whole thing is... It is the bleed and everything else.
Yeah.
Ship, the big ship at the in there that Ultraman and Superman push.
Yeah.
That's Authority's ship. Yeah. I mean, or it is a the same style of ship.
N-class Galaxy Cruiser.
Yeah, something weird.
Shut up, nerd.
Why did they just use a Legion time bubble, which seems to be able to solve all these problems?
Legion time bubble.
That's my question.
They should use a Legion time bubble.
That's what I would have used.
Use that Legion time bubble.
We were talking about Brubaker a little bit and Vertigo. I don't know if anyone had picked this up a couple weeks ago. They finally collected the Sandman Presents the Dead Boy Detectives, which was written by Ed Brubaker and drawn by Brian Talbot. And this thing is...
I got something to say after this, too.
Didn't Jill do a Dead Boy Detective story, too?
Yeah, she did. I have that one.
Okay.
This is copyright 2001 originally, so I mean, it's like 7 years ago. And
lame. Anything old is bad.
Is
it in previews?
I'd never read these characters before. Apparently, they came out of Sandman, and it's what it says. It's two dead boy detectives. It's two teenage or just
I think
teenage.
They call them tweens now, Chris.
The tweens. They're two tweeners. Yeah, two tweeners that refuse to let tweeners. Death.
Sounds weird when you say it.
Tweeners. 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 Southern tweeners.
Tweeners. Want some popsicles?
Mr. Neesman's basement scares me.
You can drink as much as you want at the strip, man.
Follow me out to the strip, man.
I got a whole fridge full of popsicles.
Yeah, exactly.
Tweeters.
Funny. Whatever flavor you like the most.
Don't mind the hacks on the backseat. These tweener kids that refuse. They're on the run from death. They refuse to move on. And so they
are
just
you
like,
serious?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
That's the fucking story.
They, yeah.
No, I'm not. I'm not.
It's
really
of the characters. Yeah.
Yeah.
Holy fuck. Never mind. No, that's just. I'll tell you about it later.
You have a similar idea.
No, his screenplay
that he's been writing.
No, not me.
Kick Brubaker's ass the next time he says.
Yeah, and so they refuse. They run from death and they hang out in a treehouse, have fun, and they are detectives. They solve mysteries, and it can be, I guess anything from like who stole the apple pie off of so and so's
Encyclopedia Brown.
Yeah, that
are
kind
they
of
dead?
Stuff. Yeah, and yeah, they're dead. They're ghosts. Okay. They're ghost
Thus
detectives.
Dead boy detectives.
I hate it.
That might be ironic,
man.
It's not that odd.
Was symbolic.
And it takes place in London, and they're all these London street kids are disappearing, and they're finding like these mummified bodies, and so they get tied into this or roped.
Oh, it looks like we got quite a cracker. We've got ourselves.
So they get tied into this whole serial killer thing, and really fun story. It's also neat if you're a Brubaker fan to see stuff that he was writing like 7 years ago, and it's. Out of Sandman, so it's nothing like you're finding in X-Men or even like
not anything like X-Men.
Yeah, it's not
Captain
anything.
America.
No, just
I'm not reading that.
No, but it's
the style, the voice.
I understand what you're saying. I find it interesting because like Brew had my attention when he was doing Scene of the Crime and all that Vertigo pre Gotham Central Brubaker and Gotham Noir, the thing that he did with Michael Lark.
Oh yeah,
with the Batman Elsewhere story and stuff. So I understand, and it's something that Ed has said himself that he really didn't get a reaction from the big comic book fan base until he went to Marvel.
Sure.
So you're right. People are discovering these runs and everything, and it is kind of funny.
It's no accident that they, 7 years after it originally came out, I think it was a 4-issue miniseries, that they're now releasing this as a brand new trade paper. It's like 7 years old, but really, really fun story. I enjoyed
it. You're still going to make money off your ass, Brubaker, even though
he'll get a cut.
It's got Brian Talbot art as well, which is always good.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That guy is nuts.
I just read
I know Allison Sunderland. I know, and of course, the Luther Arkwright. I was just going to mention.
I
still have your Luther Arkwright books, by the way.
I would like it back.
All right.
I just finished reading The Tale of One Bad Rat.
Oh, that's cool.
By Brian Talbot, which is about an abused girl and her like fixation on Beatrix Potter, the Peter Rabbit.
Sure.
It's awesome. It's a really great series. If you, I picked them up in singles for 50% off in Pittsburgh. Well, no, it was 50 cents a piece. in Pittsburgh. I went to a comic shop. I was just searching around. It's obviously meant to be read in a trade paperback.
Read.
It's definitely meant to be read.
If you can read.
But it's really good. It's really good. It's pretty dark and pretty serious, but... Brian Talbert's an amazing artist, so I love...
That Alice in Sunderland is what a just
that thing's
unbelievable
insane.
Display of artistic ability.
Yeah, so there's like too many levels to that book. I mean, it's a history, it's a story, it's, you know...
It's like every... Like anything he could possibly think of to do, you know,
he does it.
Covering one subject, yeah.
Fucking nuts.
He, you know, I'm bummed because I got to interview him in San Diego in 2007, I want to say, and I hadn't read much by him, and now I've read so much since then, and it's like I got to get him back. And instead, Mark Schultz is another creator like that.
Talbot's a guy that I think would. Hasn't he had some moments of disclosure of stuff where he's just like he kind of says what's on his mind?
That's why I interviewed him. Moonstone in America released his book, which is just a bunch of comic convention and great
stories.
Legendary stories about comic creators, and it's funny as hell. And you know, we mostly talked about that. And I was aware of Luther Arkwright, but I hadn't read it yet when I first
Luther Arkwright is so far ahead of its time. That thing's outrageous.
I think they're republishing. I think Titan or whoever in the UK is republishing it.
I mean, that book is outrageous.
It's the predecessor to the meta stuff in
like Crisis
Watchmen
on Infinite Earths,
you know,
and
a lot of the British guys stuff.
What year was that originally published? What years were that? For what?
Early 80s.
Yeah. I want to say like 81.
I was going to say, yeah. I think so.
I mean, that stuff...
Maybe even... It might have been late 70s.
Yeah.
That first one might have been like 78 or something.
That stuff was so far ahead of everything else at that time.
He's a cool dude.
Somebody had... I don't remember. It was like in a forward to one of those books he mentions, talks about how, you know, he was doing this stuff long before... The Watchmen's and the Sandman,
I mean, everything.
All that stuff.
Crisis on Infinite Earths.
So much stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about a guy who can travel between all these
parallel
universes.
The bleeds and the multiverses and all that stuff. Yeah,
but he's the one man.
He kind of originated all that stuff in comics to some degree.
Luther Arkwright's the one guy you can sort of his own will. He can freely travel amongst all these worlds, and there's a group of good guys and a group of bad guys, and they're sort of covertly always fighting on all these different alternate universes, and Luther Arkwright can travel between all of them easily. He's like the one guy who can sort of just like will himself.
I've never heard
that
before.
You guys are
awesome. Been out of print for a long time.
There's a television series that was made in 2005 that's running right now on the Sci-Fi Channel. They ran it on Friday nights, but it got low ratings, so now they're burying it on Monday nights. It's called Charlie Jade. It was only on for one season, and it's a parallel universe thing where a guy discovers that he is one person that can travel between three parallel Earths, and our Earth is considered the Beta universe. There's an Alpha, Beta, and a Gamma. The Gamma universe is this pristine Garden of Eden Earth that the Alpha Earth is stealing its resources to keep its multi-conglomerate run society going. And it's this great little mystery. It was produced by Canadian and South African producers. A lot of it is filmed in Cape Town. It is such a cool, exotic sci-fi show.
Charlie Jade.
That sounds really familiar. Like, I might have...
It came out in 2005.
Yeah.
Well, check that out.
It's exactly like Luther Art. It sounds like if you like parallel Earth stuff, you gotta read the Luther Arkwright stuff.
I can find
it's coming out on DVD. Charlie Jade is
Arkwright
coming out on
spelled?
DVD.
ARKWR. This will be like when you both tried to buy it off eBay and I beat you.
And it's Luther.
It's Luther. I think you can get them both on Amazon.
It's L-U-T-H-R.
Really? Yeah, I think they've been republished and get them on Amazon.
Okay, here. Slider.
Yeah, if you like Grant Morrison.
I love Slider.
You love Luther Arkwright stuff.
Great.
Holy shit. I mean, it's out there.
But I'm not going to read it.
How do you spell it?
ARKWRIGHT.
Yeah, bring back my copy of that first one. I need to read that.
I'm going to write you.
I have a copy of Demon Haunted World for you, too. By Carl Sagan, Demon Haunted World. It's a great book.
I'll read it.
character that seems to be crossing between the DCU and Vertigo still is the Phantom Stranger. Am I right, or has he not been around?
He's the Phantom Stranger.
Yeah, because he's right now he's in Madam Xanadu.
He was in Shadow Pact,
which I think he was in Shadow Pact as well.
Yes, okay. So I think he is
kind of a brief cameo in Justice League.
That's true.
Yeah. There's a wonderful showcase. There's a showcase collection of his 50s and 60s.
Yeah, I've been meaning to pick that up.
He's a very cool-looking character, but I just wonder what the hell he's supposed to be.
That's the great thing about him. I hope there's never an origin.
They'll ruin him with an origin.
Yeah, you know, I mean, he really is the last mystic character that really is a blank slate.
They never solidified his origin, right? I mean,
one
of them, he was Jesus or something like that. Or Judas or something?
I don't know. Oh, you know, actually, I do kind of remember that he might have been Judas. Yeah.
There was a Secret Origins issue about Phantom Stranger presented four different origins, stories, and Alan Moore wrote one of them, I believe.
So that's the real one.
But one, he was Jesus. One, he was like an angel that was kicked out of heaven. One, he was like something else. There was like, it was still ambiguous, and they just sort of handed off the four different writers to be like, make up an origin.
That's who he is. He's Paul.
Actually,
Lynn.
I was more sure of those Paul. But I that's a great character. And also, they seem to be kicking Dr. Occult around. And I kind of hope...
He's in Reign of Hell.
Yes.
Reign in Hell.
Reign in Hell.
Make it rain in Hell.
And it's, you know, it's those, like, Action Comics number one characters that are still around.
Mm-hmm. He's also in Reign of Hell.
Is he?
Yes.
It's the new Dr. Fate.
It's the new guy. It's the Kent Nelson.
They're all sitting
with new Kent Nelson.
He's like the grandson, isn't he? Kent Nelson's grandson.
I didn't think he was related.
Yeah, he's distantly related.
Okay.
But they're all sitting around a table, and they're all talking about mystical stuff. And he's like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing here.
I'm an addict psychiatrist.
Keith Giffen does a great job. Is he?
Who did who created that?
Dr. Fate?
No. Oh. The new one. The new
Rain in Hell.
No,
it started out with Steve Gerber.
Gerber.
Actually, that
it was good. It was amazing.
Trade paperback just came out this week.
I mean, at first it was like, what the? I didn't get it. I mean, I was like, what the fuck is this? But once I started to get into it, it was
really
beautiful.
Good.
The artwork was phenomenal, but it was really good.
So. I hear great things about the Jonathan Latham Omega.
I haven't read that.
But I have to admit, I kind of, being an old fart and everything, I am kind of bummed and felt like Gerber was fucked by not being given the chance
to do that.
Go back to his character. And I know he initially resented not being able to go back.
Mm.
So.
All right, on the Luther Arkwright stuff here real quick, the Adventures of Heart of Empire, what's the...
That's the two.
Those are the two.
Okay, where do you start at?
The Adventures of.
The Adventures of Luther Arkwright, looks like you can pick it up for about $15.
At Amazon, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I thought they were both available.
Now, is the second volume, is that a new volume, or is that the old stuff?
Heart of is the second.
Or maybe I heard that they're making a third. Maybe I heard that
they may be. Heart of is the second one.
Right.
In color. More recent, a sequel to The Adventures of Luther.
One of the better British podcasts, Panel Quarters, talked about. I want to say they're reprinting the second, or that they are working on a third one.
Mm-hmm.
And
Talbot's been very busy of late. I mean, he went for a while there where he wasn't really doing much of anything. It seemed like.
Yeah. And now
all of a sudden he's got stuff coming out all the time.
Probably mention you can also get Heart of Empire: The Legacy of Luther Arkwright at InStockTrades.com for $18.
Oh, there you go.
And pick up Alice in Sunderland. But don't read it too fast.
Yeah, just
I made myself slow down.
Take your time.
It's an awesome book.
Yeah.
It's almost too. The only criticism I'd have for Talbot is that sometimes I think his stuff. I think Alice in Sunderland could have been even better if it was just a little tighter in some way, and I don't know how you would do that with that story.
Alum.
Well, it's really hard because
not only is
the story crazy, but artistically it's all over the place, and he's trying to do. I can understand what you're saying, absolutely, but
it would be more accessible. I think that's a book that you could give to a lot of people who are just interested in history. If it was just a little. Had a like a tighter story to it some way. You could hand it. I could give it to someone who's a history buff, and they would. That book would be perfect for them.
Right.
But because it's just a little
too
loose.
Abstract.
Yeah, like a little. It kind of. It wanders.
Yeah.
That's that whole book just wanders around that town.
Yeah.
pretty much. It can be hard for someone who's not used to reading sequential art
to get through it.
Yeah, and like not get confused about, because you do. I mean, no, it's not even in order, really.
Yeah, it's not an easy. I mean, it's.
So it's like a Grant Morrison book?
It's
Talbot was Grant Morrison before Grant Morrison.
Yeah, it's all about Alice in Wonderland and the author and the town he's from and people's perception of him and the reality of it. And it's all like a mix of fantasy and like real history. Life history of the mm-hmm. region and all this
stuff. I remember you talking about that.
I picked it at the top of the stack.
Yeah.
Alice in Wonderland.
Speaking of top of the stack, and I haven't talked to you about it yet. How did you like the amazing, remarkable Monsieur leotard?
I loved it.
Isn't it fun?
I would have almost the same criticism.
A little loose?
A little. It is a little loose. I think it's interesting with that story, it ties into a lot of historical stuff, mm-hmm. but he doesn't give you a big clue on the historical significance. If it had more, and I hate saying have more narration, but I like just something to
a little
tighter to let you know where they are exactly historically.
I think years, like a year,
because he ties into real historical events, sure. but it. He doesn't tell you that. You kind of have to. I had to look it up.
You kind of have to guess that it's. You have to know your Jack the Ripper lore.
Yeah,
on stuff.
And I think if it. Again, it's a
Eddie
book.
Eddie Campbell is purely doing books that.
He's purely doing work
that he wants to do. Yeah. And doesn't. You know what I mean? He's doing it only for himself.
No, I mean, I really. Like,
and I don't mean that in a bad way at all. It's just he can afford that. You know, he has the luxury of just being able to do. Whatever he wants to do, and
the only thing that I think the same thing with Talbot, that the only thing that holds it back from maybe giving it to someone who's not used to reading sequential art is that looseness. You can't tie it all together in a way. It feels like a set of comic strips almost, and doesn't feel like a whole story unless you're really used to reading. Sequential art, and you go into
This sounds really highbrow, but it's kind of like advanced reading for comic book fans. You know, it's you kind of have to know sequential art and be able to follow through. But it's absolutely gorgeous. But I figure you would like it for two reasons. It has street toughs that are named as street toughs and a big talking bear.
Oh no! I mean, I loved it. I mean, it's a real. And like when you did the top of the stack, you mentioned the fact that they had the parts where he sleeps for a number of years. That's something to someone who doesn't read sequential art.
Yeah, it would be really hard for them to understand.
He just woke up 40 years later.
Yeah.
They wouldn't understand the joke.
Both times you mentioned that book, it's brought something to mind that I keep seeing a movie, a documentary that's coming out about. I can't think of the name of the movie now. Damn it. But it's about the guy who he was a French like tightrope walker.
Okay.
And he walked across the World Trade Center.
Okay.
Top.
Okay.
On a tightrope, and they're doing a documentary on. He took like 5 years to plan this. To like shoot a cable across the top of the World Trade Center and walk across it, and he spent like 45 minutes up there jumping up and down. This was in like the late 70s, I think.
I remember. Jesus. What is it with French people and the need to climb tall buildings?
I don't know. Well, they
like you got the Spider-Man, like, you got this guy. Wow.
He's not one of the Wallendas, am I correct?
I don't believe.
Because he's not French. They're not French.
No,
they were German.
No.
Okay.
But I mean, it just looks. I've only seen the trailers
it's
on it.
Great.
It looked amazing. Just this guy, he just did it to do it. I mean, it was just sort of. He wasn't like a political statement. It wasn't a. He just
like because he was like it was. Yeager just kind of did it.
Yeah, he just like yeah. He just wanted to.
Yeah,
do
he,
it.
And he was doing it to have fun. He went back and forth eight times. He
the
like
cops went up
the
there
water.
And they're like and he's like jumping up and down. And this is however tall.
Holy
the fucking world.
Oh, they were the fifth tallest buildings in the world. Yeah,
they. I mean, they had to plan it out. They shot. They started with a fishing line and shot it across there with a bow and arrow, and then they would connect the fishing line to a larger
string.
And they just did it over and over again until they were finally able to pull this huge cable across that he'd be able to walk on, because they needed something, you know.
What channel?
No, it's coming out.
It's called Man on Wire.
Man on Wire, there, yeah, thank you.
Great.
Yeah.
It already came out in select theaters. It's actually really, really good.
It looked just awesome. And you did see
it? Can you get into that? Could you get into that movie without a parent? Is that rated R?
There was some side boobs.
But for whatever reason, every time you bring up that much, that comes to mind.
There's
like
footage of the guy going over?
Oh,
awesome.
Oh, yeah. It was all...
If you have a little vertigo, it does creep you out a little bit. Because the pictures are just vast.
Vertigo.
There's so many pictures and a little footage, and it's fantastic. He had to, like, convince his friends to, like... Because they knew they were going to get arrested.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the biggest worry was he was going to die. It was, you know
not
what I mean?
For him.
Well, not for him. No, yeah. He never had a doubt. But everybody else, you know, thought that... This was insane. This was crazy. You couldn't, you know, and I mean, but he did it, and it made it look easy. I mean,
around
like,
comics, we're going to do that, right?
Windy City Comic Con.
I'll show it to you.
I think he's part of the 24-hour podcast, actually.
It's 3 o'clock in the morning.
But I just want to mention it.
Cool. I hope so. Catch
it. It just looks phenomenal. Cool.
I still need to, now that Tom's read, I need to get you my copy of
The Amazing Monsters.
Speaking of documentaries, Harlan Ellison.
Oh, yeah.
I heard about that.
I
want to
see that coming.
Looks cool.
Yeah.
Crazy Harlan. One.
He's
amazing writer.
He is. He's well, and
his
creativity,
just pure creativity, is unbelievable.
Only outweighed by his audacity and short fuse.
Almost to his detriment to some
degree. Yes.
Oh, that was an answer too. That whole thing with him and Michael Fleischer is the most ridiculous misunderstanding in comics, and it's one of the most infamous feuds that still isn't over. And like Fleischer, you know, went out of the business and it got just uglier. And
he was another writer.
In the Comic News Journal, or
Comic Journal.
Thank you.
Oh, well, the whole thing between the Comics Journal and Harlan Ellison.
I'm guessing Kelly might know what.
Oh, it was Gary Groff.
He just called Fleischer Bugfucker.
Right. As the compliment, he called Michael Fleischer. He goes, "That guy writes Bugfucker."
As a compliment.
Well, but it was like, but it was his kind.
Explained that he liked him as a writer.
Right. Yeah, it was like a happy kind of like, hey, that guy's bug fuck nuts, and it's like, hey, fuck you, no, I'm not, and it's like, no, calm down, and it never did calm down, it only escalated.
Yeah, it's kind of like the I heard Paul Simon had a bunch of
I know what you're talking about with his fucking music collection.
No, Paul Simon after Mrs. Robinson had come out had met Joe DiMaggio, and DiMaggio was like. Pissed.
Yeah, where did I go?
Where did I go? I'm right here. I haven't gone anywhere.
And it's like, no, you doof. It's a metaphor for what? What did I meet her for?
Baseball.
I didn't meet her in the first place. Joe, shut up.
What the hell was I going to say now? I forgot. Ellison was one of those writers, another writer that I hadn't really read much about. I had heard more about him than had experienced his actual work. And then when I went and read his work, I was sort of surprised by it.
In what way? Like
in the tone of it is nothing like the rest of his.
Oh, no.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
it's not his. Yeah, I just didn't expect his writing to be the way it was compared to how he is in everything else that he does. You know?
Demon with a Glass Hand, one of the best Outer Limits of the original run. City on the Edge of Forever, which was changed because Gene Roddenberry wasn't crazy about the way Harlan wrote his script, but there's a book out that has Harlan's original script.
A Boy and His Dog.
Boy and His Dog, of course. I mean, the guy's amazing.
Yeah.
He really is. And you know, actually, if you haven't heard on the Bendis tapes on part 3, Bendis tells an excellent Harlan Ellison story. Sweet. And actually,
Bill Clinton getting a blowjob from a Jew and get away with it.
Thanks, Tom. I guess they don't have to listen to it.
Listen to Around Comics again.
No. And actually, I had Diana Schutz on. One of my first Word Balloon interviews, and she teased that Harlan Ellison's Dream Corridor, Volume 2, was finally going to come out as a trade.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Harlan's message board right after the interview, And people let him know that, hey, this guy did an interview, and I guess, you know, what's the deal? And he's like, what are you talking about? And it's like, well,
I hate John. John
he hunted John Sunderstown.
Volume 2 is supposedly coming out. The editor from Dark Horse, he's like, I haven't talked to her in months. What the hell? He goes, where do I find this? And it was a podcast, and he's like, I don't know how to open up an MP3 file. Jesus Christ, why don't people write anymore? And he's all pissed off. It was awesome. I pissed off Harlan Ellis.
So, awesome. You know, it's a long list of people you've joined.
I understand, and I was like a badge of honor, and I sent him a CD. I never heard back. But I'm like, God, I'd love to have you on the show sometime, man. I'm like, it'd be great to have you on. So
nice.
You could, like, rip me
interesting
one.
Interesting talk, man. Harlan's
do it.
Else.
Do it.
But I'm looking forward to this documentary.
Yeah.
Remember his little commentary? Pardon my spit. Remember his little commentaries on the Sci-Fi Channel?
Oh, yeah. That's how I was first introduced to him. I just remember seeing those things. Who the fuck is this nut? But I loved it.
Tom Snyder would have him on his old CBS talk show. Mm-hmm. And he was nuts. And I remember, man, he was ringing the death knell for Marvel back when Marvel was in bankruptcy. He's like, do you realize comic books are going to change? They're never going to be the same again. Marvel Comics is this close to going out of business. And it was just crazy to hear. I'm like, wow, this is cool. Big fan.
All right. We never talked about what we were supposed to talk about.
Yeah.
What was it? You never brought it up.
Oh, I'm sorry. What was it?
It wasn't anybody. We
got plenty of time for the election. A couple weeks. We're going
to
talk
about how crazy Republicans are.
On Twitter, I was saying the same thing because I'm like, wouldn't it be great if C-SPAN covered the San Diego Comic Con the way they covered the convention?
Oh, God.
That would be awesome.
Dan DiDio.
Exactly. Listen, welcome to. All right, here's our platform.
I just hate to see
what we're doing.
The Daily Show cover, the San Diego Comic Con.
That would be great. But there were a lot of similarities between the San Diego Comic Con and really the Democratic and Republican
people convention. Rushing for free shit.
Yeah. Exactly. And you're running to watch these exclusive little film clips and stuff and buy into the message of the companies and everything. No, it was cracking me up, man. And little panels and the private parties are wild.
Yeah, shit-faced drunk.
Exactly. Yeah.
Except one of them was awesome and one of them wasn't.
We should talk about this.
Well, now you're getting
We should talk about this when DC Decisions
Around
comes out.
Around Comics has no political news whatsoever.
Yeah, we'll
DC Decisions comes out and we figure out whether or not that is maybe the best idea in comics or
the worst
idea ever.
I'm already leaning once.
I think for a corporate, you know,
it could be really bad. It could,
you know, for independent comic book publishers or independent writers, whatever, to put their own political views into their artwork and their writing.
Put their views into the mouths of icons is very dangerous.
For corporations to all of a sudden start, you know, using their corporate sponsors to...
I'm going to be interested to see
how their trademarks, their characters?
Superman is a corporate sponsor.
Okay.
I mean, Superman is a corporate
entity.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, he's a
well, it depends because, you know,
he's Michael Jordan.
Depend on how they do it, I think.
Right,
if they do it, like, where they're...
It will depend on how they... that'll be interesting to see how they...
Because early networks wouldn't really let, like, Rod Serling write a real political debate. And it's like, well, we got to tame this down because we don't want to piss anybody off. We don't want to piss any potential sponsors off.
Mm-hmm.
So if it is this kind of blunted, you know, debate, it is going to suck. I kind of hope it is going to really be wait a minute, where do you get off?
But who's speaking for those characters? You know what I mean? It's like,
I'd like to see the pro-life Superman.
You know what? I like Ethan Van Sciver's art. I think he's insane when it comes to his political views.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, who's speaking for Batman?
I think
the
line where it's drawn is, I think, a really well-fleshed-out character will have some sort of political leaning to them that you pick up. Like, have no doubt what Green Arrow politics are. But also, on the other hand, you can do it very clumsily and just have Superman, like, rant about this or that.
Well, Superman's a Republican, according to Frank Miller. But
I mean, that's
he also said that about Batman. He said Batman was a Republican too. I thought he was kind of a Reagan.
Frank Miller's a Republican.
Well,
you're right. Superman and Dark Knight was
anarchist, really.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. No, you're right about that.
But I think
anarchy. I tell you what, that
interesting.
Whenever Decisions comes out, we'll have the new Savage Dragon, which Savage Dragon endorses Barack Obama.
That was hilarious.
To talk about that and Decisions and other political stuff. So I think
I've been
we're
doing nothing but watching MSNBC for 3 weeks.
Oh God!
Love Keith Olbermann.
Are you okay?
No, I swear to God. I mean, this week I've wanted to go buy a sniper rifle.
I don't like Olbermann.
That's
why I don't
watch. I'm with you on that. And actually, the lack of forgive me, but as a broadcaster, the lack of professional decorum.
There's been some crazy stuff going on.
You suck.
And
honestly,
why don't you just buy him off?
I agree with a lot of Keith Olbermann's basic politics, but I would turn my Edward R. Murrow badge back in because Murrow hated a lot of colleagues at CBS and never let it show on the air.
It was pretty shitty that it got that bad. You know why?
It's true.
They don't get bored of the speech and they cut away. C-SPAN was the same way.
Exactly. No, it's if you really want unbiased coverage, go to.
I do appreciate
BBC America.
They're good
Obermann,
too.
At least when he comes back after a speech and sort of corrects. Blatant lies.
I agree with that. And there's nothing wrong with fact checking, but really the sniping between him and Matthews and Scarborough and David Schuster and Obermann.
It's the mix of reporters and commentators and pundits, and there's no difference. There's no difference between truth and fact, and everyone's screaming at each other.
And instead of covering the story, they become the story. And it's like, you're not the story. Back the fuck off.
I'm really more of a Lauren fan because Heidi and Spencer piss me off. I mean, that's I don't.
All right, more politics and comics in 2 weeks.
Last topic, The Hills. My girlfriend loves that show. Won't admit to it, but I've caught her watching it multiple times. Oh, what an unlikable group of humans!
I fucking hate that.
You know what's horrible about that show?
I will not watch it. I walk out of the room. My roommate is addicted to it. She puts it on and she starts waving her arms in the air with the theme song and everything. I'm like, fuck you. I can't watch it because I can't watch shows where they're promoting people for being famous for being stupid because they're all fucking stupid.
And they're all on awkward dates.
Watching
two rich people have an awkward date at an expensive restaurant. Restaurant.
What's the
crappy reality?
I've been there.
You're not
familiar
with things.
What's the one? Oh, shit.
She heard you talking about it.
All right. I want to thank everyone who left us an iTunes music review over the last few weeks.
Okay.
Thanks to
Juggler,
Alec Berry,
Magazine Joe,
Elk Paint, Sweet Butter, and
Soviet War Child or whatever.
And Preacher 13. So hopefully a Preacher fan there. Tom versus the Flash a couple times a week. Check that out.
Preacher HBO.
Powers TV show in active development. Brian is writing the script.
Oh, good.
As we speak.
Really?
Has had network meetings. Sony is involved. I don't know which network is, but they actually read the books. They like the books. They gave him real notes.
I know what
network. And there's a director attached, and hopefully it'll happen.
Yeah, maybe.
You know what network?
Yeah. I heard.
Nickelodeon, right?
TV Land.
Bravo.
I guess. Are they tied to Sony? No, that's Time Warner.
Time Warner, yeah.
Okay. Because I thought the HBO project was something different that Brian was working on.
Maybe.
Okay.
I'm on 11 o'clock comics every week on either Thursday or Friday, whenever Vince B gets that out. You can also check out my column, Comic Shots, at ifanboy.com every Thursday morning. It is a drink and comic book recommendation. Tom, you're still in beer.
Jesus.
All right. I'd like to thank. Visit our sponsor, InStockTrades.com. Please remember to check out the WindyCityComicCon.com.
October
25th.
Saturday.
If you are planning on coming to the show, go ahead and pre-register. It's the best way for you to get into the con and guarantee your gift bag, which is going to be really nice.
First 500 people.
First 500 guests get a gift bag. Everyone, have a fantastic week. We'll be back again on Monday with another new episode. In the meantime,
he's out of practice. Look at him.
We'll be everywhere in
and around comics. I've been staring at a Valiant Reader number 3 all all night. 75 cents of goodness right there. 75 cents. Expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2008.